You're not listening to me. My daughter put my face in her two hands, turned it around, looked me square in the eye, and said, "You're not listening to me." And she was right. My child was in the process of telling me something that she needed, wanted me to hear, that was important to her at that moment, that she needed. And for some reason or other, I allowed my mind to go someplace else. I wasn't listening to her. I am one of the professional listeners. Why was I not listening to someone so important to me? Was I busy with matters of consequence, thinking about all the important things I have to think about? That incident happened over 30 years ago. About that same time, I was invited to facilitate a workshop for a neighboring congregation. The minister thought the board wasn't listening well to each other. Your board, I'm sure, listens well. Keith affirms that. That minister didn't think they were doing a good job, and so he asked me to come and work with them, and then said, "Well, by the way, as long as you're going to be here, how about you preach on Sunday?" I wasn't even ordained yet. I hadn't done this thing. However, that weekend workshop led me to my first sermon with this title. Working with that board taught me a great deal. Not the least of it was my absolute certainty that the anonymous writer had gotten it exactly right. "I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I said." So for nearly three decades of ministry, it's been in one form or another my signature sermon. I have nothing else to say. Not really. Because when we don't listen, we violate the very core of religious community. Do you listen? Really? Or are you like many, if not most of us, thinking about what we'll say next, even cutting the other off mid-sentence, responding not to what was said, but to our idea of what might have been said or what we thought they were going to say? "I know you believe you understand what you think I said." I have that conversation with my son almost every time we talk. There is no way to understand what anybody says unless we listen. Listen carefully, attentively. About the time of the human potential of the movement, many of us were practicing active listening. Remember that? "I was so furious at the blah, 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 blah." "Oh, you're angry." My memory of active listening in those days was something more like a parlor game than real listening. Though the technique left something to be desired, the theory was right on. Listening is not a passive exercise. It's a skill that must be learned and practiced just like any other. Dr. Scott Peck writes, "Listening well is an exercise of attention and by necessity hard work. It is because they do not realize this or because they're not willing to do the work that most people do not listen well." When I was growing up, children were expected to be seen and not heard. I see enough gray hair to think some of you may have been in that same generation. My parents, like so many parents in those days, did not listen to children. And children who are not listened to do not learn to listen. Perhaps that's why Albert Cullum's words are so poignant. "Good boys and girls always listen. To learn, we must listen. We must listen all the time. Good boys and girls never talk, but they always listen. We should listen and listen and listen. And your words, your words, your words. The robin sang and sang and sang, but teacher, you went right on. The last bell sounded the end of day, but teacher, you went right on. The geranium on the windowsill just died, but teacher, you went right on." Teacher, you went right on. Preacher, you went right on. Mother, father, wife, husband, son, daughter, friend, you went right on. Do you really, really listen? To listen, to hear, to understand is so much more than a workshop exercise. To be with one another in this moment is a holy moment. That's what Martin Buber meant when we spoke about the difference between an I-thou and an I-it. The holy resides in the relationship between the I and a thou. A colleague tells the story of a restaurant for confused tourists and local residents who'd pawned their taste buds. The family came in. The waitress took the parents' order and then turned to their small son. "What'll you have?" she asked. "I want a hot dog," the boy began. "No, no hot dog," the mother interrupted. "Give him what we ordered." But the waitress ignored her. "What do you want on your hot dog?" she said. "Ketchup," the boy replied. "Coming up," she said, and walked to the kitchen. There was a silence at the table. Then the youngster turned to his mother. "Mom, she thinks I'm real." The odor of thick and greasy food permeated the room, but his was a hunger beyond all power to suppress, the hunger to be heard, to be listened to be real. "Mom, she thinks I'm a thou." I expect many of you will disagree with me, and we can talk about this later, but if I were the king or the president or God, I would outlaw cell phones in public places. Yay! That ubiquitous cell phone makes sure nobody listens to anybody else. And don't we look important? We got things that can't wait till we get home. The thing about listening is it has more than one purpose. Listening allows us to take in information if we hear what's actually being said. But more meaningfully, listening allows us to bear witness to another person, to their experience, their feeling, their thought. When we are heard and affirmed, we feel real. I know you believe you understand what you think I said. Not listening has become more than a human deficit, it has become a national pastime. Talking heads on TV scream over one another, nobody listening to anybody. I don't know about you, but I am such an idiot, political junkie. I listen to all that stuff and I say, "Why are you doing this?" Because nobody else is listening, except Jean. She listens. You listen too. Is this a new phenomena, something our affluent culture fell into or worked its way into or caused? Sadly, no. In the 8th century, before the common era, the prophet Jeremiah admonished those who hear and hear and do not understand. And the psalmist bemoaned, "They who have ears but hear not." And Ephesians remind us that we have two ears and one mouth, that we may listen more and talk the less. We never learned that. We ministers tend to spare a fair amount of time in theological discussion, conversation, argument. We act as though we're listening to each other as we ponder what profound and brilliant statement we will next make. Have you been there? But on those rare occasions, when we move away from our deep attachment to the sound of our own voice and really listen to a colleague, something important can happen, something life-changing. This was the case for me in conversation with a Methodist minister who is both my colleague and my friend. She was recovering, as best she will ever recover, from the tragic suicide of her eldest son. We went to a movie together, anything to prove that life can go on. We left the movie and began engaging in a fairly heated discussion about Jesus and the crucifixion. My naive comment, typical UU style, "I just can't buy the idea that Jesus died for our sins." My friend turned on me. She said, of course he did. And so did Martin Luther King Jr. So did my son Joey. Of course they did. She was right. Jesus tried to say, teach the way of love. Few listened, and he died. Martin Luther King Jr. tried to teach the way of nonviolence, and few listened, and he died. My friend's son Joey, he was just beginning to articulate his message, the message of passionate youth, and apparently few listened, and he died. All died for our sin of not listening. UU poet, folk singer Rick Maston speaks to the universality of the experience. I ain't waving, babe, I'm drowning. Going down in a cold, lonely sea. I ain't waving, babe, I'm drowning, so babe, quit waving at me. I ain't laughing, babe, I'm crying. Why can't you see? Going right down in front of you, and you're waving, babe, you keep waving. Hey, babe, are you drowning too? Oh, babe, you're drowning too. So many waving, smiling, drowning, so few really here. We are so wrapped up in our busy lives and our preconceived notion of how the world is that we just don't listen to anything that may change our mind. What's that about? Is it fear? Fear that if we really listen, really hear another person in pain, we'll have to do something about it? If you don't hear another word I say, please hear this word. Listening is doing something. I'll say it again. Listening is doing something. Giving advice is not listening, nor is it doing anything. Giving your opinion is not listening, nor is it doing something. When we talk about how rotten we feel, we don't want a pep talk. We don't need to hear how wonderful we really are or how our perceptions are wrong. We want to be affirmed, known, and accepted just where we are. It's as though we erect those walled cities constructed on prejudice, opinion, and assumption, serving no purpose other than to confound and confuse. And it seems that the more invested we are in the issue, the more we babble on in our own language, not hearing any other who might have something real to contribute. In those ancients, building their Tower of Babel, the poet John Ghiardi saw a possibility entrapped in failure, but yearning toward the long light. A possibility entrapped in failure, but yearning toward the long light. And so it is for us. The light we yearn toward can be lit if only we listen. Listen deeply to someone else's reality rather than forcing them to accept ours. A colleague received a desperate call from a distraught parishioner whose teenage son had just had a mental breakdown. Apparently, the son believed that Satan had him bound in chains. When my colleague arrived, she found the boy just as the father described, sitting on his bed, his wrists and ankles bound in imaginary chains. Rather than attempting to reason with the boy, my colleague sat on the bed quietly for a while until the boy said, I can't move. I have chains on. She said, I see you do. They must be terribly tight and painful. But she said, I'm a minister and I can break them if that's all right with you. Oh, yes, he replied. With which he reached out and broke the invisible chains and told him he could get up and walk around whenever he wanted to. She then explained he had not been well and that he needed to go to the hospital. And now unbound, he went willingly for what was to be in the beginning of a long period of healing. Putting ourselves and our preconceived notions aside and being with the other takes enormous energy and empathy. And sometimes I just don't want to listen. I'm too busy or too tired or too indifferent, and sometimes I don't listen. And sometimes I remember my friend's outrage. Jesus died for our sins, and so did Martin Luther King Jr., and so did my son Joey. All for our sin of not listening, not hearing. To hear one another to speech is one of the greatest gifts anybody can possibly give to another person. And it can be life-changing and life-giving. To really listen and really hear is to discover a way of being together, heart to heart, soul to soul, eye to thou, to find the sacred in our midst, creating not only authentic religious community, but also paving the way to peace and to life abundant. So may it be for us all.